Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here to break down the upcoming Battle of Ohio matchup between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cleveland Browns. The Bengals return to Paul Brown Stadium after a month. Logan Wilson said yesterday on Sunday it'll be a month since the last time the Bengals have played in front of their home crowd. And this game, when we were predicting all of the season, Charlie, we thought, I definitely thought at this point the Browns were easily the favorite, and I didn't really think the Bengals would be able to compete. I definitely am favoring the Bengals in this matchup now, but when I was going through the numbers, I don't quite understand, other than Baker's injury, how the Browns are 4-4, because they're a top five defense, they're a top five rushing offense, and across the board, they're a really good team. So this is going to be a good matchup between these two, despite what the Browns' record says.
That's a great place to start. Like, it's so interesting to re-evaluate where this game is over the course of the season. You can look at it with the long-term view, the fact that the Bengals are favored to win this game against the team that myself and many others predicted to win the division at the start of the year. But then there's the micro view, the fact that the Bengals were on such a strong start and now we're coming off their most disappointing loss of the season. But I think overall what we've seen with Cleveland is, I think you have to start with Baker Mayfield. They lost to the Steelers last week because Mayfield missed throws, just point missed throws. There have been games this season where the offense has just had an all or nothing emphasis on the nothing quality, scoring single digits a few times. Like, it's a pivot season for Baker Mayfield. Honestly, I think the most interesting part of this Bengals game is that it's a pivot game for Baker himself as the Browns kind of figure out who they are and what they want to be long term. And Baker shredded the Bengals last season. The Bengals fixed a lot of their defense, and now he gets to see him again.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the quarterback parallels between the Bengals and the Browns, because many say, you know, the way Joe Burrow is playing, it's almost a year ahead of schedule for what people thought he would be. And then on the other end, Baker, I know he's injured, but I think there's some questions up there if Baker can be the quarterback that can get this team to a championship level. So a lot of things to figure out up there in Cleveland. But one thing that they don't have to figure out is how good Myles Garrett is. He leads the NFL in sacks with 10.5. I think the next closest was 8.5. So he's just playing at a ridiculous level. Best pass rusher, in my opinion, next to Aaron Donald, who you could say is, would you even dub him just as a pass rusher? But so the Bengals will definitely have to have a plan for him. And as Zach Taylor said, Charlie, let's talk about this. It's not just Myles Garrett. The Browns went all in to upgrade their defense this offseason, signing guys like Jadeveon Clowney and Tack McKinley. They are a very good defensive front. And as we saw last week and talked about it, the Bengals' pass protection not coming off one of their best games against the Jets, and it still remains TBD if the Bengals' pass pro is legitimately good, in my opinion.
Yeah, there have been certain games this season that I think tested the Bengals' secondary strategy and how they invested in depth in 2, 3, 4, and 5 guys instead of a true 1A. And now I think this is the equivalent game for the Bengals' offensive line. What the Bengals did this season was take multiple shots. They signed Riley Reiff to a mid-level contract. They signed Quentin Spain to a 1-year deal. They drafted Jackson Carman in a move where they traded back. They theoretically could have been more aggressive. Mm-hmm. So now that overall strategy of getting three guys and not spending for a, say, you know, you all know the names, Joe Tooney type, that'll get tested here, because what Myles Garrett does is he lines up against your weak link. Last season, when he really, really gave the Bengals a hard time, it was really often against Bobby Hart and whoever the Bengals had at right guard, whether it was Fred Johnson or Billy Price or Alex Redmond or whoever. So again, what the Bengals have done this season is they've created a more well-balanced line. And now the expectation that they have is this has to be the game where a well-balanced line takes a step forward against Garrett, because if it doesn't, you know, Garrett had 2 strip sack fumbles against the Bengals last season. And that can't happen, frankly, for the Bengals to win.
Yeah, so we talked about that element of it. Outside of the Bengals' pass protection, the receivers are humming. I was glad Tyler Boyd was more involved in the game last week. I just think that it was not to the Bengals' service. I know they were getting a lot of production out of Jamar, but I just think Tyler Boyd is so important in this offense that the more touches he can get, I just think it's always ends up being a good thing for the Bengals. So I was glad to see him more involved. We talked about T. Higgins kind of having his breakout game in terms of deep ball connection with Joe Burrow. Bengals were not able to run the ball against the Jets, and I know the Jets have a very good defensive front, but they need to get the run game going, especially because I want to talk about this, Charlie. The Browns are going to try and control the clock with Nick Chubb. And if the Bengals want to win this game, I think a lot of it's going to come down to being able to keep their offense on the field. Right now, the Bengals are scoring really quick. And although they're scoring, it's giving the it'll give the Browns more chances to be on offense and, you know, kind of milk the clock. And that's exactly the game they want to try and play. So to counter that, Joe Mixon's got to be more involved in this game. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on why you thought the Bengals struggled to run the ball against the Jets and how they can do that better this weekend against the Browns.
Quick tangent. I think that the Bengals week two game against the Browns last season, I don't have any proof for this, but just the feel that I get was that game kind of made the coaches reevaluate the run game on both sides of the ball. You saw after that a priority to stop the run first and foremost. Look at who they were playing. They were playing Amani Bledsoe, Khalil McKenzie, Christian Covington. They kind of switched to playing run stoppers. Mm-hmm. And then the flip side was that, I believe, was the game that Joe Burrow threw the ball 60 times or something on primetime football. In the weeks to come, there was much more balance when Joe Mixon was in the game. I do think that how the Browns really just shoved the ball up the middle on that last drive when the Bengals, all they needed was a stop for one more chance to take the lead. I do think that drive left an impact on kind of how they look at the whole question. And you're right with the importance of the run game. Like, the plays I go back to are the third and the fourth down on the Bengals series that started at the one, mm-hmm. where it ended up in a turnover on downs. On third and fourth down, the Bengals threw the ball, which is fine. But the Browns basically played third and long defense, the Jets played third and long defense last week when the Bengals were in that situation. Mm-hmm. They had four down linemen, but basically everyone else dropped into coverage. And that prevented Boyd and Chase and Higgins from being open. Like, the whole thing is, like, you would think in a goal line situation, you would put more emphasis on the line of scrimmage, but the Bengals weren't running the ball. The Jets had no fear that the Bengals were going to try to use that as a way to score. So that's something that has to change, because even more than the Jets, the Browns defensive line is going to win their matchups at the line of scrimmage. You have to be able to run the ball to kind of open up the pass game against a defense like that.
Do you think that there's been a game off the top of your head? I don't mean to put you on the spot, because I don't think there has been a game. There's been games where Joe Mixon's had a few really good runs, but I haven't walked away from a Bengals game yet this season and said, yeah, the Bengals really gashed that team in the run game, or they really ran all over them. I haven't seen that yet from the Bengals, and I'm wondering if at some point if that's going to happen in this offense.
Yeah, I think the Lions and the Steelers are good examples of when the Bengals really went to the run game in the second half and featured it in that way with the Joe Mixon closer role that they really envisioned that Joe Mixon didn't get to do last season. At the end of the day, like, last I checked, he's still top five in the AFC in rushing yards, still top five in the AFC in total attempts. There's still a priority to get Mixon the ball. It's just being more efficient with, I think it goes back to upfront, being more being more powerful up front to create those lanes is what was missing against the Jets.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I know you cater towards your talent. Obviously, the Bengals are loaded at wide receiver and quarterback, but I still think it's an area where I'm waiting to see it really click for the Bengals, because once that does, man, that offense is going to be very hard to stop. So let's talk about the other side of the ball in this matchup. And I said in my three keys to how the Bengals can win this game, this is going to be a line of scrimmage game. Whoever wins the line of scrimmage is going to win this game. And that means whoever's going to be able to protect their quarterback or impose their will from a running standpoint, and also, on the other side of it, get pressure and really dominate up front. A very uncharacteristic performance from the Bengals against the Jets from a pass rushing standpoint. I know a lot of that had to do with Mike White getting the ball out so quick, but every other game we've seen, Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard, Larry Ogunjobi, DJ Reader just really take over and make it known of their presence. We didn't see that against the Jets. And there's a lot of reasons. It just wasn't a good performance across the board from those guys. But they're going to have to play really well against Nick Chubb, because if they have the amount of missed tackles that they did, they had 15 missed tackles against the Jets, it's going to be a long day. And there's nothing more defeating to a defensive unit when you just get absolutely run over.
So my number one question is what base defense they use. I think this is the part of the Jets game no one talks about. The Bengals open the game with their five defensive linemen set, with Josh Tupou and DJ Reader as a double nose tackle. That's basically them telling you, we are stopping the run and daring you to throw the ball. That allowed Mike White to get into a rhythm. He completed his first however many passes, and then the Bengals switched to their base 4-2-5 defense. But even after that, like, they didn't use the same corner blitzes and safety blitzes that had been a staple all season that particularly stopped the Ravens. So I mentioned this being a really interesting data point for Baker Mayfield's career. Like, what kind of quarterback do the Bengals kind of dare Baker Mayfield to be? Are they going to give him the Mike White treatment and maybe do a lot of the same five defensive linemen stuff and allow Baker to beat them in front because they just don't have a ton of confidence that he'll be able to beat them over the top? Or do they give Baker Mayfield the kind of treatment that they've given the better quarterbacks they've faced and do two things? One, play their base defense more consistently, and two, really mix up blitzes to try to keep them off guard. The answer to that question will be how good they think Baker Mayfield is. And that, I think, is the turning point for the entire game, how good they think he is and how good Baker really is.
Yeah, we'll see. And there's just so much drama in Cleveland right now. I'm interested to see how it impacts Baker, if it brings out the best in Baker, where he's like, you know, I don't really care about all that's going on with Odell, and you can talk about my shoulder and all this. Like, will we see that Baker, or will we see the continued storylines of, you know, is his arm strong enough? All of the things that we've heard right now with Odell Beckham. The news out of Cleveland is that prior to the trade deadline, Odell's dad posted, you know, something talking about Baker not getting him the ball, and Baker liked it, or did something to basically assure what his dad said. And the Browns have basically excused Odell from being at the team facility and practicing. So the Browns, it's looking like they're not going to have Odell on Sunday. You can never say never, but it's looking like he is not going to be a part of the Browns' game plan on Sunday, because if he didn't practice yesterday, he didn't practice today. I don't know what would change. And when you kind of go against your teammate like that, I don't think head coaches and general managers like that too much. But that definitely changes things, because although the production really hasn't been there for him, you did have to account for Jarvis Landry and Odell, and now you don't. But the Browns have some good pieces outside of their two receivers. Ernest Johnson, who's just filled in for Kareem Hunt at that backup role. So that this will be a good test for the Bengals defense, because I know they were really bitter about their performance against the Jets, and they'll want to play a lot better against the Browns.
I know it's not at the same level it was at last season, but I think really when you start with the Browns, you have to give the most credit to the offensive line. Mm-hmm. The work Bill Callahan, Bengals offensive coordinator, Brian Callahan's father, has done to, one, create an efficient wide zone run game that is the basis for the entire offense, and two, how they use that to set up a screen game and a short game where they get playmakers the ball in space. That's kind of where it all starts with Cleveland. It's funny, what made the Bengals game, the second one, such an anomaly last season was that was basically the only time Baker beat a team taking shots over the top of the defense. And I think that what the Bengals have done at cornerback, I mean, LaShawn Sims and Darius Phillips were in huge roles for that second game last season. This year, because the Bengals have shored up their cornerback depth, there will be even more of a reliance on the line and the screen game, I think, and the run game as well for Cleveland. So you spoke about the Bengals' defensive line. Are they able to replicate the success they had against the Ravens, against a line that's just consistently powerful, strong, effective, and on the same page?
Yeah, and let's talk about this since we did the matchups here. Zach Taylor said this game is especially important because it's a division game and the Bengals want to go 3-0 in the division. But they also have their bye week coming up. And Zach Taylor said it's really important that we carry momentum into the bye week. And the Bengals have some tough games coming up following the bye week. And if they're able to kind of flip the script and get back on track here at home, stay 3-0, that Jets game doesn't really matter too much. But if you lose against the Browns, then this becomes, okay, the bye week, you know, what are we going to try and figure out here? And then your next couple of games are against the Raiders, the Steelers, who that's going to be a game again, the Chargers, the 49ers. You got some good teams coming up. So that's why if they're able to take care of business at home against the Browns, put themselves 3-0 in the division, I think it's really going to help them in terms of at the end of the season where they stack up.
Yeah, you know, the way I just look at it is how much of what happened against the Jets was a blip and how much of it was a trend. Are there legitimate reasons to be concerned about the Bengals tackling athletic playmakers? Are there legitimate reasons to think that if the Bengals face a really good rusher up the middle, that's going to change their entire game plan? And are there reasons to believe that pass protection can be an issue in the fourth quarter specifically? Like, all of those things were the reasons the Bengals lost to the Jets. They'll face a team that's better at a lot of those areas than the Browns. It'll be another chance to show that, again, whether that is a blip or a trend. And I think the answers to those questions could be the defining points of the entire season.
Yeah, a huge game. And Charlie, I also wanted to bring this point up. Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach, yesterday said the Browns are desperate for a win. They know the importance of their what the expectations were for them. I mean, we were talking about the Browns as the team to beat in the AFC in a lot of areas, and they have not gotten off to the start. But when a coach says they're desperate to win, the Bengals are going to, and I've said this a bunch this week, the Bengals are going to face a very, very hungry Browns team. And that's why I think this game might end up being a really close one where it's like whoever has the ball last could end up winning this game.
It's important to remember, too, like the amount of swing that can happen for this game. The Bengals are now in second, but, you know, they're like a half game behind the Ravens. The Browns then are one game behind the Bengals. So much can swing based off this. The Browns season will ultimately come down to, I think, just how well Baker plays. But still, the swing nature, the pivot point nature of this game, in terms of how the AFC North standings line up, and in terms of what it shows about the Bengals and how prepared they are to face an elite pass rush and an elite run game, that's what makes this doubly interesting, separate from where it lines up in the season schedule.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a fun one here on Sunday. Well, that's it for Charlie and I breaking down the upcoming matchup. Now we're going to bring in Jason Hoffman for your favorite segment where he's going to talk about his overs, unders, and predictions for the Week 9 spread of the NFL season. And here he is. It's Jason Hoffman. And Jason, you and I are coming off a pretty rough week.
You know,
for multiple reasons.
You know, we went out there and we laid a clunker last week.
We did.
You know, but got in the film room, you know, one week at a time. That week's gone. It's time to just go 1-0 this week.
Time to
flip the script. And we're going to go out and have ourselves a statement game this week.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, that was not good. The good news is, and I do like to go against the grain. I don't like to be in line with all the national experts. Everyone and their relatives were on the Motor City Mad Men, the Fighting Dan Campbell Detroit Lions, who went out and looked like the worst team in football. They're not the worst team in football. Houston is. Mm. Miami's number two. Detroit's probably
number
three.
How about that matchup this week? Houston and Miami. Sign me up.
Yes. My question is, if you're not a diehard fan of those two teams, where are you at in your life? Gambling degeneracy-wise, where you're going to actually tune into that. Because that's the only other people who should be watching that game. Not even fantasy players, just gambling degenerates. So let's move on.
Okay.
Let's have ourselves a week this week.
So for me, the game that's catching my eye right now that I think I would put money on would be the Arizona Cardinals at the San Francisco 49ers. Right now, the Cardinals are favored by one.
1 point.
1 point. If Kyler Murray does not play, which he's dealing with an injury right now, so it might be Colt McCoy. And I don't know. I think the 49ers got some magic after their win in Chicago. I'm taking the 49ers at home in that game.
Now, what kind of better would you be? Because at a plus one, you might as well go money line, right? Just win outright? Okay.
Yeah.
So you'd go outright.
Yeah.
And just for everyone listening, the 49ers to cover the one is a minus 110, so a standard bet. Mm-hmm. And the Cardinals to cover the minus one is a minus 108. I like the under in that game as well. I don't disagree with you. I think the Cardinals way too banged up right now. Mm-hmm. Divisional game, it's going to be rough. Colt McCoy, I forgot he was still in the league, to be honest. And I follow the Cardinals, so that tells you everything. I also like the under in that game. Mm-hmm. 46 points, minus 111. My favorite game of the week.
Yeah, what stands out to you?
That stands out, and this is a weird one, but I'm going with ownership management gave up on us. So the Dallas Cowboys are going to absolutely house in Jerry World the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
10 points, that's a lot of points. Dallas is minus 108 to lay those 10. But I'm going to lay the points just because I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on when you lose one of your elite players, your stars. And Denver basically – now they're claiming that Von Miller wasn't that big of a loss, whatever. They can make up for it all they want. People are saying that. But – I think it was a pretty big loss, and I think that locker room is not going to respond very well. So I'll take Dallas laying the 10. What else you got?
You know, the other games for me that really stood out, it's like, how funny is it how much Buffalo is favored over Jacksonville, which, by the way, you and I thinking Jacksonville was going to – I know we're not talking about last week, but, man, did the Jaguars let us down because we both thought – definitely going to beat Seattle without Russell Wilson. Come on. And now it's like 14 and a half. I think it's going to be more than that.
It's the biggest line I can remember seeing so far this year.
Well, wasn't Rams Houston pretty high last week too?
It was. Like I thought it was 13 and a half.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't remember anything bigger than 14 and a half. I'm probably wrong. So out there, please feel free to let me know if I'm wrong at Jay Hoff and Cincy on Twitter. You could make this line 17, I'd probably take it.
Okay. Prior to the Aaron Rodgers saga, this is what I wanted to talk to you about. How in the world is Kansas City favored? I know now you could say, well, that makes sense because Jordan Love, we don't know what he is as a quarterback. But how were the Kansas City Chiefs a 7.5-point favorite over the Green Bay Packers?
So that line moved. So here's the thing. Quarterbacks in the NFL – are the most important players to point spreads. Number two is wide. It's a split between wide receivers and starting number one cover corners.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterbacks, Tom Brady is the most – sorry. In the era that I've been paying attention to this, which is about 15 years, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
Tom Brady is the most valuable player in football because he was worth 6.5 to 8.5 points depending on the opponent. Aaron Rodgers, according to this line, because it opened up at Green Bay plus 3.5 to now 7.5 is 4 points. So Green Bay was never going to be favored in this game. It was technically a half point because the home team always gets three, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a 3.5-point spread is just basically saying it's a pick 'em, but we're going to give the Packers a half point. So I think that coming off the win on Monday night, it was Monday night, and the fact that that Kansas City defense, even though it was against the New York football Giants, as Boone likes to call them, that offense not so great. Daniel Jones not that great. I think that given the fact that Green Bay is limited with what weapons they do have, I think everyone saw that as if whichever was the home team was going to be favored. Now right. That Rodgers is out, that's 4 points. So it tells you exactly what Aaron Rodgers is worth over Jordan Love, if you're one of those value over replacement type people. I don't like 7.5. I just don't. Patrick Mahomes, people have speculated if he's injured, hiding an injury. He does not look like the video game athlete that we've seen the last couple years, few years, I should say. I don't like 7.5 in this game, even though Jordan Love's playing. There's a lot of big play potential in that arm of his, apparently. There's also the game planning.
They can just run the ball.
Game planning scheming type thing.
Right.
Yep.
They did against the Cardinals.
Instead of defending 40-plus passes a game, now you're going to defend mm-hmm. how many runs a game. So, you know, we'll see. I don't like the 7.5 there. I don't like laying the points. What I do like is the over, 48.
Yeah.
That's where I fall in that game. But that's how much Aaron Rodgers is worth right now in the books is 4 points because it opened at 3.5. Now it's 7.5.
So what other games have your eye in terms of maybe don't fall into this trap, sucker bet type games.
The New Orleans Saints giving 6 to the Falcons. Now, granted, it is at New Orleans. But are we really going to fall into this Taysom Hill experiment trap again?
Well, it's going to be Trevor Siemian, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but Taysom Hill's back, right? He's healthy again?
Yeah. Nah, he might not.
Or is that next week? That's next week that he comes back. Sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, even better. Trevor Siemian, good on him. He's made a lot of money in the league. Don't know that he can beat a team that has a full week to prepare for him. I like Atlanta plus 6. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do. It's minus 113 right now. So that means that's where the heavy amount of money is on. One other game that I will do before my home dog of the week is going to be the Patriots laying 3.5 going to Carolina.
Yep.
I don't know how that line is where it is. It opened at Patriots plus 1. Now it's been bet all the way down to Patriots minus 3.5. The fact that it opened at plus 1 kind of shocked me because of what New England did
to the Chargers.
And
which
just
you called that, by the way. Giving you props for that.
Yeah. The one thing I did well last week. Thank you. thank you. But yeah, that them opening as dogs just kind of shocked me. And now it's obviously been bet down to 3.5 the other way, but I think New England easily wins that game. Mm-hmm. So 3.5 is a simple lay for me.
Okay. So why don't we get to our boom, boom.
So in order to avoid what's happened 2 out of the last 3 weeks, I am going to
yield
the floor to you, okay. Kelsey.
I know you're going to say, like, how are you going to do this? But how about this? Not a great week, but I'm going with the Colts at home versus the New York Jets as my home dog of the week. I think that what we
get
saw
it in tonight
the,
before the game starts.
I know. I thought that what we saw from the Jets was I have very few thoughts on if they can replicate that again. And I think the Colts, but like, can Carson Wentz not have like amnesia in the middle of the game? That'd be great. but I think the Colts are going to win this one outright. And I think it's
so you would lay the 10.5. That's a lot of points. Okay.
I think that's why the Bengals lost. The Jets was so bad.
Yeah, it was exact same line too. It was 10.5.
I think the Colts are a really well coached team and they've got some good players. So that's my home dog of the week.
Definitely a more veteran team than the Cincinnati Cincinnati up and coming.
It was either
Bengals
that or the Dolphins, but I'm done betting on the Dolphins.
Okay. So I've already gone one emotion game this week. I'm going to go another emotion game. And I'm going to say the New York Football Giants on a short week hosting a natural body clock 10 a.m. game against the Las Vegas Raiders, who are getting 3 points.
Emotionally.
Are laying 3 points. The Giants are getting 3 points at home. After the Gruden stuff, they rallied around each other and beat Denver, who does not look like a good football team at all. Mm-mm. The Giants put up a valiant fight against Kansas City on Monday night. I like the Giants to win outright. The Ruggs incident is just absolutely awful. And to not ignore the football aspect of it, it also takes away their big deep threat. Yeah. So I'll take the Giants to win outright. It's going to be a plus 115, so a $100 bet's going to win you $115. And this line opened as the Raiders getting 1.5 and has since been bet to them giving 3.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's a little weird. I'm going way against the grain on this one. But, yeah, that's my dog of the week to take at home. And then last but certainly not least, Battle of Ohio, Baker Mayfield and his wounded wing, non-throwing wing.
Wounded wing. I love that.
Come into Cincinnati with Odell Beckham Jr. and witness protection somewhere in the greater Cleveland area. that's a weird situation. He will not be a distraction on the sideline if everything we're hearing out of Cleveland is true. Mm-hmm. He may not even be on the team by Sunday.
Yeah, I doubt
Bengals
it.
Are laying 2.5 in this one. Mm-hmm. It's a standard minus 110, bet 100, win 90. Cleveland's getting 2.5, but it's a minus 108. So bet 100, get 90, 98. So the money and the tickets and everything else say Bengals cover the 2.5. What do you think?
I'm torn on this game. I don't know why, but I do think that the Browns are going to win this game.
Okay.
I think that at the beginning of the season – okay, so I went through all the numbers last night, and the Browns being 4-4 makes zero sense to me because they have a top five defense in almost every – rushing, they have top three. Passing, I think the top eight. They're really good defense, really top rushing offense. Myles Garrett leads the NFL in sacks. And I just think that this game is going to be a line of scrimmage game. And with Kevin Stefanski saying yesterday, this is a we're desperate for a win. I don't know. I just, for some reason, I have a feeling that the Browns are going to win this game. I can't tell you. I think it's going to be a 24-21 type of game here. I think it's going to be whoever has the last ball, whoever has the ball the last. And I just think it's I can't pick Cincinnati at home here. And I know that might not make Bengals fans very excited, but
that's
I'm
all right.
giving my
You're calling
analysis.
It as you see it. That's what we like about you. I don't disagree on the last possession thing that much. I also, after watching the Bengals last week, neither line
right
did well.
Right. And the Bengals defensive line, the Browns defensive line, you can argue, is even better than the Jets.
Oh, 100% is, yes. Yeah. So I will say I think that the Bengals last week were looking ahead to this week a little bit, maybe. Game planning especially. I think that
– crazy because Zach Taylor literally said every day last week, we know what type of game this is going to be.
Yeah.
And they still did that.
100%. I think – honestly, I think this ends up being a get-right game for Joe Burrow.
Okay.
From a statistical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I think he spreads the ball around a lot more. I do think he ends up throwing more than 50 times, which sounds crazy, especially when you're playing in a division game. You don't want to get into that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like this is going to end up being a track meet this week mm-hmm. for some reason. So I'm going to take the over of 47 total points.
Yeah.
And I am not going to lay points on the Bengals to cover 2.5. I'm actually not going to bet the win either way. But if you put a proverbial gun to my head, I would take the Bengals to win, go into the bye week 5-4, 3-0 in the division, and have their entire destiny in front of them when they come out of the bye after this. But like I said, my play is going to be over 47. It might be the nice last day that we have temperature-wise, sun-wise, lack of wind-wise here in the greater Cincinnati area. So I think we get that track meet that I was hoping for in the Green Bay game. That never came to fruition. So that's my thought. Over 47, minus 110, standard bet. That would be my guess. And speaking of betting, all lines are provided courtesy of Tipico Sportsbook. Tipico is a partner of Gannett Company, Inc., which is the company that Cincinnati.com and the Enquirer belong to. And Gannett may make money off of its partnership with Tipico and the lines that you hear about here. Please remember that if you or anybody that you know has a problem gambling, please call 1-800-GAMBLER and get the help you or they need. Thank you.